support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. Before the advent of COVID, I visited the National Museum of Roller Skating in Lincoln, Nebraska. The director at the time offered fascinating insights about the history and diversity of roller skating and its connection with Lincoln.
We share a building with USA Roller Sport. They are the governing body of all competitive skating in the United States. So it's kind of the home base for competitive skating here in Lincoln. And this is actually their building, and they allow the museum to be part of the building. Lincoln hosted the 1962 National Championships, and the community really took towards roller skating. And when they found out the organization here was looking to relocate in the late 60s, they really publicized, helped get some land grants and things like that to help the association move here to Lincoln. So they've been here since the late 60s, and that's why Lincoln over and over does host competition. We have our USA Roller Sports Hall of Fame. So on the left side we have athletes, and on the right side we have coaches. The whole museum is pretty much the evolution of the skate, but I wanted one display just to show it all in one bunching seat, so to show you how differently the skate has evolved through time.
The very first roller skate was patented in 1819, and the first iteration of roller skates had inline wheels designed to mimic ice skates.
We have an original copy of the first roller skate. As you can see, the entire first case here is all inline skates. Roller skating started off as only inline sport. It was meant to mimic ice skating. And so the first 40, 50 years, the only skates you could get were inline because of that.
Roller skate design started to evolve in the 1860s with the introduction of the quad skate.
We had other companies try to remake the roller skate to fix that main problem of turning corners. So here we have different examples of different patent models. The first quad skate was invented in 1863 by an American named James Plimpton. So we have a copy up here. Mr. Plimpton, as a sort of rehabilitation for an injury he had received, he was ice skating, but then in the summertime, he wanted to continue skating, so he tried to switch over to roller skating. He didn't like the design of the inline, so he took it upon himself to create his own. So he came out with a four-wheeled quad skate. Works a lot like a skateboard, so you shift your weight from side to side, and the trucks and the hangers really turn the corner, and it's very easy to use your weight to shift around corners. Given the disparity of the distance between the wheels as well, gives you more balance. So since the wheels are not all in line, they're in more of a quad shape. The two main emphases were a greater balance and the ability to turn corners really revolutionized the roller skate at that time. And the Plimpton model became the model for roller skates in the later half of the 1800s. So this is really when roller skating became very popular, and the first wave of roller skating hit in the 1870s through the 1890s. They would generally use a saddle shoe, something with a thick sole that would be able to grab the back of the skate, and then they would use a strap over the top. People worked 10, 12-hour days all the time, and so it was basically the upper class that really had the time to go roller skating. We see from the different magazines at that time, you see the costumes people would wear. The men would wear jackets and ties, women would wear the long dresses with the corsets. Turn of the 20th century, labor laws come into effect, then roller skating really branches out to more of the masses and becomes more of a national sport. After Mr. Plimpton opened his roller skating company, more and more companies decided to create their own types of roller skates as well. So we have more of the famous American companies here that created roller skates. The Henley Company started in 1881. Their trademark is a little arch in the center of their skate. The Richardson Ball Bearing Company innovated the roller skate in 1884 when they added ball bearings to the wheels. So that reduced the friction, helped for a more smoother ride. The Chicago Skate Company opened in 1905, really became the predominant roller skating manufacturer of the 20th century.
The boot skate was introduced in the 1940s.
A lot of different companies experimented with the boot. So this Chicago skate was around the 1940s here. That was a very popular time when they were sort of transitioning over, but you could still get clamp-on skates, of course, 1960s, 1970s even. But for the competitor-wise, 1940s is really when, especially the artistic people, would switch over to the boot.
Odd and unusual skates are popular attractions at the museum.
We have an off-road rollerblade with inflatable tires, a lot larger than the average skate. This weighs about 7 pounds, which is almost twice the weight of a normal skate. We have a Ritter Road skate from the 1890s. This was developed in England. It's an inline skate, but it has wooden posts attached to the skate. This was for people who injured their ankles frequently, and so this gave you more stability on your ankles to tie these wooden posts. We then have a stilt skate here, a foot higher off the ground than a normal roller skate. And we have two motorized skates. Our first motorized skate is our larger one here, built in the 1950s. You strap the engine to your back like a backpack, and it goes up to 40 miles an hour. Now, the second one we have was developed right here in Nebraska. A gentleman from Fremont, Nebraska decided it was a good idea to strap a chainsaw motor to the toe of his skate. This skate goes up to about 30 miles an hour.
Unusual skates include skates for horses, birds, and bears.
We have a skate for a horse. We then have a roller skate converted for a bear. A lot of circuses and acts like that would have bears roller skating. I've actually seen bears more frequently in pictures than any other animals for skating. And then we have a pair of brass skates designed for a cockatoo from the 1960s. We also have two sets of cowboy boot skates, developed in Texas, of course.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from the National Museum of Roller Skating in Lincoln, Nebraska.
We have the evolution of the wheel. As I mentioned before, the Richardson Ball Bearing Company really innovated the wheel in the 1880s with the addition of the ball bearing. So when you spin them, you can see they do not spin as easily because there's all that friction by the lack of the different ball bearings. So once you get the loose ball bearings in there, they really spin a lot easier and give a more fluid motion while you're skating. Wooden wheels were used inside, metal wheels were used outside. Today's wheels now we have made of different urethanes and plastics and rubbers and such like that. Our display on Is It a Shoe or Is It a Skate talks about different shoes that are kind of camouflaged as roller skates. So we have an example of a modern Heely. The Heely company came out with a tennis shoe with the heel under the wheel. We just wanted to show that was not a new concept. So we have a pair of sandals down here from the 1970s with retractable wheels, as well as a child's clog dating to early 1900 with wheels underneath as well.
The four main types of skating include roller derby, figure skating, roller hockey, and speed skating.
Roller derby started in 1935, but it was more of an endurance race. So teams of two would just travel around the rink, circle after circle, for 10, 12 hours a day. Your team had to achieve a certain amount of mileage or your team was disqualified. One person from your team had to be skating at all times. The object of this race was for each team to skate 3,000 miles, the distance from San Francisco to New York. The Derby, they had to travel the length across the country. So each race would last a month, 2 months at a time to skate that long. So you can imagine this is not a big spectator sport. People aren't going to come every day to see you circle around the rink to achieve 3,000 miles. So after a couple of years, they decided to switch the rules, add contact, and we have roller derby like it is today. Teams of five. Each team has a person called the jammer who wears a star on her helmet. The jammer scores all the points. So she travels around the rink to pass people on the other team. Every time she does that, her team gets a point. Everyone else's job is to not let that happen. So roller derby is really growing in this country. Almost every state has a roller derby team. Many states have multiple teams. Here in Lincoln, we have one team called the No Coast Derby Girls, and they play a lot of regional teams, Kansas City, Wichita, Omaha, places like that. The second type of competitive skating we have is artistic skating or figure skating. We have pairs, fours, and precision. Precision is a group of 12 to 24 people all dressed alike, skating in unison to the different music. So we have different descriptions, how they score points, costumes and photographs from the different types of artistic skating. We have two examples here of combining roller skating with two sports. So we have roller basketball and roller soccer. Both of these have been played since the early 1900s. They're just not as popular. So we have a photograph of a basketball team from 1922. As well as a photograph of women playing soccer in the early 1900s. Still played today, but very, very small. You have to find a group almost to compete in these different sports. But they are coastal here in the United States, California, Florida, New York. The third type of competitive skating we have is roller hockey. Roller hockey has been around since the 1880s, but it started off more of a game of polo. So you had short canes, but they were on roller skates, of course. So 1880s it began. Not a lot of padding. Their uniforms were just basically matching t-shirts and shorts. Nowadays, roller hockey is a lot more like ice hockey. Inline hockey has big hockey jerseys, hockey sticks. Inline hockey, of course, uses the inline skates. Rink hockey is the other type of hockey, and they use the quad skates, and they're played inside. The one main difference between ice hockey and roller hockey is roller hockey is a non-contact sport. So you have to be good with skating, starting, stopping, stick movement, and things like that. Now the fourth type of speed skating. Early speed skating prior to the 1930s was all professional based. If you were fast enough, you could enter different competitions hosted by rinks and win prize money. Even a lot of companies would sponsor you. So we have a shirt with the Chicago Roller Skating Company stamped onto their uniform as their sponsor, help pay for traveling costs and things like that. Almost every division is for the inline nowadays, but they still do have one division for quad skates for the people who do use that. After the 1930s, when the Depression hit, they switched over from professional skating to amateur skating, so no prize money allowed. But in 1937 was the first year they started the national championships. Started in Detroit, they move generally every year to different cities. So we've had championships every year since 37. Lincoln, Nebraska has hosted the most championships, around 26 or 27 different times since the beginning. See how the costumes have changed over time? Not a lot of color here in our 1940s, 1950s costumes here. You can see they added different sequins and bright colors just to be flashing, attract different attention while they're out there skating.
In the early days of roller skating, music was performed by live bands, but eventually the organ became the common musical accompaniment at skating rinks.
This whole time I've been playing organ music from our new Hammond organ. Well, we have a display just on rink music and how important rink music is to the sport of roller skating. So early roller skating music was all live music. They would have small brass bands, they would have small orchestras up in the balcony. They then switched over to the organ music. You could have a Wurlitzer organ, a Hammond organ. We also have an example of a band organ that all could be used for roller skating. The disco era got some more techno music. Nowadays, you have a lot of digital music played at rinks.
Children's skating displays, including Girl Scout and Boy Scout skating merit badges, are popular displays at the museum.
We have our two children's displays over here, roller skating and the Scouts. Around the early 1950s, roller skating was established as a badge that you could earn for the Girl Scouts. The Boy Scouts adopted it a couple of years later. A lot of the requirements for achieving a merit badge in roller skating, we have the different levels of knowledge you need to know. Skate repair, skate upkeep, how to skate forwards and backwards and things like that. A lot of children's skates were adjustable skates. So we have skate keys here. So when your foot got bigger, of course, you wouldn't have to go buy new skates, so you could adjust them through your skate key.
Traveling roller skating shows and traveling rinks were popular in the 1940s and 50s.
In the corner here, we have our display on the skating vanities. They were a traveling roller skating show in the 1940s and 1950s, a lot like the Ice Capades. So they would dress up in bright, elaborate costumes, synchronized skating. They traveled all across the country, did international tours, South America and Europe, skated for audiences like the Pope and the Queen of England. Skating was also involved in the vaudeville era, so we have our display here on the different vaudeville acts that participated in roller skating. On the far wall here, we have a large photograph of a traveling roller rink. The Lowe family, around 1912, decided to create a roller rink that traveled across the country, a lot like the circus. So they would take everything they need for a roller rink, pack it on the backs of trucks, and head to a rural community. So they would set up a tent, they would bring their own flooring, their own skates, music accompaniment, everything you need for a roller skate. They'd set it up in one community, stay there 2-3 months, they would then tear it down and go to the next community. They traveled to over 200 cities in 28 states over about a 40-50 year period before establishing their own rink in Birmingham, Alabama, 1950s.
For further information,
visit our museum website at rollerskatingmuseum.com. We're also available on Facebook.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the National Museum of Roller Skating in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities, such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter, down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolfe, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives, and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So yes, please support your local NPR station.